Let's Pod This. My name is Andy Moore. Friends, if you're watching this on YouTube or perhaps you're seeing a clip on Instagram, you notice that I am in a wood-paneled space holding a red phone, and I am indeed talking on that phone. This is the Civics Hotline, and we're going to be launching a new social media series in the future, so I thought I would go ahead and try it out here. The audio quality is on purpose. If you are listening to this in your car or your headphones and it sounds like I'm talking to you on a payphone, that's by design. I promise you future podcast episodes won't use this microphone, at least not regularly. But today's a special day. One, I wanted to try it out and show it off. Secondly, it's a week before Thanksgiving, and I thought this might merit a little more intimate of a conversation, something a little bit different than what we usually do. And so I even wrote a few notes down on my trusty field notes, what is this thing? A notebook, I guess? Memo book. And I wanted to refer to those notes while we talk today. You notice, obviously, there's not a guest here, it's just me and you. In what appears to be a living room, but is actually just a closet in the basement of the Democracy Den, with a picture of Willie Nelson and a pennant about Oklahoma, two states that mean a lot to me. No, Willie Nelson's not a state, but you and I both know he's from Texas. So I wanted to start with a couple of statements about what I've been up to the last couple of weeks. I know I haven't had an episode that's come out, and I apologize for that. It's been a little hectic. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about thankfulness. 'Tis the season, and then we'll wrap up with a look ahead. So first of all, the last couple of weeks, I'm sorry, it's been so hectic. I think most of us feel like we're going 90 miles an hour, and indeed that's how it feels to me as well. The week after Thanksgiving, the first week in December, I will be out of town for a conference that I am hosting in Miami, Florida, on behalf of the national organization that I work for, the National Association of Nonpartisan Reformers. And let me tell you, organizing a conference is a lot of work. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of agenda shuffling, there's a lot of AV costs. Holy moly. Friends, if you would like to start a business to fund this movement and donate, you know, to Let's Fix This, start an AV rental company and just rent stuff for conferences and hotels. You will retire handsomely, I assure you. It is insane. So anyway, I've been pretty busy with that. And in addition, my daughter was sick for most of a week. My wife had a surprise surgery. They're both doing fine and recovering at home. But that certainly, you know, fills one's plate quite a bit. Also, last weekend, I drove down to Austin, Texas, for a convening on a new thing called consensus voting, which is basically a new way to tabulate ranked choice ballot. So you can still rank candidates, but on the back end, instead of instant runoff where votes are redistributed, this way it calculates the head-to-head winners between all the candidates, like a round robin, if you will. So obviously if there's just two candidates, it doesn't matter. They go head-to-head automatically. But if you have three or four or five or eight or whatever, this is a way to really easily see who is the consensus winner out of all of those based on voters' preference. I think it's really exciting. It's relatively new. Well, it's an old idea. In fact, it was first developed back in around the year 1200, so it's pretty old. Kind of disappeared, came back during the Enlightenment. In fact, a French man named Condorcet corresponded with Thomas Jefferson about it, but was kind of lost in the shuffle of the French Revolution, only to be discovered several years later by a couple of bright mathematicians who have an interest in voting. And that leads us here to 2025, where it's come back. It was really exciting to be in the room. There was a Nobel Prize winner in economics who was in the room. There was a panel discussion that he was on. Former Senator Joe Manchin was there talking about it. I think it shows some real promise, but I don't expect it'll be on the ballot here in Oklahoma anytime soon, but I do think this is a way to speak to the critics of ranked choice voting and assuage their concerns. I don't really know if assuage is a word. Is that a French word? I don't know. It could be Cajun. It could be Swahili. I really don't know. But that took me away for a couple of days and gave me a lot of time to drive and to think about what democracy means to me and, you know, what the hell we're doing here in this democracy den with this ridiculous setup that I've built and why this is important. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what I'm thankful for. I think top of mind for me is rights. You know, we live in a world where we see countries around the globe who don't have rights at all, or certainly not the same as here in the United States, and yet the U.S. continues to slide down the list of democratic nations. We are less democratic today than we were a year ago, certainly more than we were 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and that is not the direction we want to slide. There are more than a dozen countries, like nearing two dozen countries, that are arguably and demonstrably more democratic than we are. They have stronger, more resilient, more functional democracies than the United States. And that says something, because we are currently the oldest democracy on the planet. We're not the biggest. India is the biggest, but they are also sliding down that list. So I'm thankful that we have rights at all, and I am thankful that there are people like you, listeners, viewers, who care about it enough to take an hour or 30 minutes out of your week to listen to a podcast about civic engagement, about voting, about elections, and say, hey, this is something worth fighting for. And I think what's real cool about this show is that I know that not all of our listeners agree with me on policy issues all the time. That's fine. A functional, a healthy democracy is not one in which everyone agrees all the time. It is one in which a healthy debate and dialogue is fostered, is encouraged, is welcomed. And that's what we want in this country. I am not the smartest nor the most well-spoken individual with a podcast out there. God help me, I hope I'm not the worst. But I think that together we have a real opportunity to engage in that dialogue and that discussion and debate, and to move the ball forward. Democracy is not dead, maybe struggling a bit, but it is still resilient because we are resilient and we can continue this grand experiment for another year, another decade further, hopefully much, much longer. One of those rights that I always have top of mind here in Oklahoma is our right to petition our government. As I'm sure I've said plenty of times on the show, that right is enumerated in our state constitution, and it is, in fact, the first right that is enumerated in our state constitution, because the founding fathers and mothers and everybody else of this state recognized that there would come a time where our state legislature is unable or unwilling to pass the laws that the people want. Maybe they don't want to pass the laws because they don't like them. Maybe they don't want to pass the laws even if they do like them because they think it might be politically difficult in a system which incentivizes people to run to the far extremes, right? Which comes back to, of course, closed primaries. So in this unique moment in time, I am both grateful, thankful for our ability to petition our government, because we are currently in the process of petitioning the government to end closed primaries. This is a double whammy. This is very exciting. Right? This is an excellent opportunity for us to use our constitutional rights to petition the government to put forth a measure for a vote of the people to say, hey, Oklahomans, do you want to continue to have closed primaries that prohibit hundreds of thousands of voters from casting ballots in publicly funded elections for which they would otherwise be eligible, save for the fact that they choose not to identify with a particular political party, right? If I don't join your club, then you don't let me vote. in an election that I'm paying for. And in many cases, that election is the only election for that position. That's not fair. And it's certainly not democratic. There have been some opponents who have put out some op-eds recently who have said, you know, that they kind of draw the line to say that, you know, closed primaries are the way to go because the petitioners here of open primaries are afraid of running in an election and trying to win. No, that's exactly the opposite of what we're saying. Open primaries allows every voter to cast a ballot. And if you don't think you can win when every voter casts a ballot, that tells me you are trying to game the system to ensure that fewer and fewer people turn out because you love a small electorate that you can control, right? Like all these things, these are not partisan issues, these are power issues, and it all comes back to those who are trying to keep the power. I, however, believe in the power of the people. Lord knows we're not perfect, and we make some boneheaded decisions on occasion, but generally, I think there is some wisdom in crowds. Particularly when those crowds are casting votes about leadership in our state. You know, I might disagree with how the general election turnout has gone in the last few elections for a lot of statewide offices. Not all of them. But that doesn't mean I'm the only one. And also, okay, in an ideal world, as far as I'm concerned, every eligible voter votes, right? 100% voting, 100% turnout. And if my candidate wins, great. And if the other candidate wins, or another candidate wins, okay. At least it's a fair fight. At least we know what everyone really thinks. But we have low turnout and people who are working to suppress it even further. That's not a fair fight. All I'm asking for is for the right to vote in every election for which I'm eligible, and then we can see who wins. All right, well, that was a much longer monologue about the right to petition our government, but I am thankful for it nonetheless. I would also be remiss if I didn't acknowledge I'm thankful for the television show The West Wing, which is at least 30 to 40% responsible for why I created that event back in 2016 called Let's Fix This that became this organization. Aaron Sorkin's writing, I think, is beautiful. It is poetic in many ways. It is inspiring, for sure. Is it realistic? No! It's television. It's fine. But it casts a vision for what government could be. Arguably, what government should be. And I had never heard that vision articulated before. Certainly not as clearly as he did in that show. Now, I was late to the party. It was a good 10 or 15 years late to the party in watching the show, but it still holds up, and next week on Thanksgiving, I fully intend to watch one or two of the Thanksgiving episodes, because they're meaningful, and they're funny, and it reminds me of why we keep fighting this fight. I'm also thankful for the right to vote. You know, this should go without saying, but not every country has the right to vote. Do I have some issues with the current structure of how we vote? Yeah. But we're working to change that, aren't we? I think the fact that we have the right to vote is greatly underappreciated. In a state that is dead last for voter participation, 50% of our eligible population, 50% of our registered voters turn out to vote. There's a lot of folks who don't believe that their vote matters, and so they don't take advantage of it. And that does make me quite sad. Now, I'm going to assume that if you're listening to this podcast, or watching this video, is it a vodcast? I don't know. But if you're doing this, if you're consuming this kind of content, you're probably someone who's a gold star, 5 out of 5 voter, right? You probably get all the text messages. You might even donate to candidates. Or to causes you care about. Speaking of which, friends, if you could donate to Let's Fix This, it would mean so much. I'll come back to that at the end, but I just want to go ahead and get your credit cards ready while you're listening. Go pull it out, and then I'll give you a link here in a few minutes that you can take action. But the right to vote is underappreciated and underused, for that matter. When turnout is that low, we are allowing half of the state to choose our leadership. The other half just throws their hands in the air and says, well, what does it matter? Look around. Look around. You see what matters. You see a state that is 50th in education. We weren't 50th in education 8 years ago when Governor Stitt got elected. In fact, we weren't even 50th in voter turnout 8 years ago when Governor Stitt got elected. Oklahoma, at the time that I was born, in 1981, Oklahoma was middle of the pack for voter turnout. And we have steadily slid towards the bottom until now we are the navigational beacon by which every other state tries to avoid. Friends, we can fix that. I am also thankful for the opportunity to shape the future, not just of this state, but of this country. And I know, okay, this one sounds lofty and sounds ridiculous, I get it, but hear me out. By voting, by going to the ballot box a few times a year, not even every year, you each have the absolute power to influence the future of our state. If you are scoffing at that in your car right now, I get it. But think about all the elections we have. Not just like U.S. Senate or governor or something like that. Or, you know, lieutenant governor, arguably a position that doesn't really matter directly. But think about local elections, city council, the bond election that Oklahoma City just had, Tulsa. Is trying to pass a sales tax increase. These are elections that not just like shape the amount of money that's in your wallet at the end of the month, but they are elections that shape how much money your city, your county, your school district have to spend. And what do they spend that money on? You. They spend it on you and people in your community. Right? They spend it on streets and water pipes. You turn on the faucet in the morning, you flush the toilet when you pee first thing in the morning, that is your tax dollars at work. If you didn't pay those taxes, if the city doesn't have enough money to maintain that infrastructure, that toilet don't flush. That sink doesn't turn on. Or it does, and the water's dirty. It's unhealthy. It's dangerous. You don't have to worry about that. We take it for granted that we can wake up every day, go to the bathroom, brush our teeth, make breakfast, drink coffee, get in our cars, drive to work. We do all of that every day and probably complain about 100 things along the way without recognizing that there is a massive amount of infrastructure that we have built. America and other developed countries are miracles of modern science in so many ways. And we have that today because people in the past said, I've got an idea. Here's what we should do. Let's get together. Let's make this a law. Let's build some collective impact and support for this. Let's levy taxes on everybody. Let's pool our money and build a future that we want to live in. Do they always get it right? No, of course not, right? Like, do they spend money on frivolous things occasionally? Yes. Who among us doesn't, right? I went to Target today to pick up a few things. They didn't have what I needed, so I left with a cup of Starbucks. Did I feel great about it? No, it's corporate. It's not even good coffee. I get it. But in that moment, it was warm, provided a little nutrition, gave me something. And then when I came to the office, two of my colleagues down the hall walked in with their Starbucks cups, and we had little cheers in the hallway, and we built some community. Is that silly? Yes. Is it also meaningful and real in a moment of human connection? Yes. Will you do me a favor and like relax your shoulders? Like unclench your jaw right now? Just take a deep breath. I know we're all pretty stressed right now. Maybe we're disappointed that the Epstein files are likely not going to contain the information that you hope it contains. Whatever's going on, you're planning about your family gathering next week, you're stressing over your menu. Your wife is at home recovering from surgery. You've got a bunch of emails you need to respond to, and it's already late on Friday afternoon. We get it. You are dealing with those everyday concerns. You are probably not thinking about how you have the ability to change the future. But you do. I was talking with a colleague yesterday about what Oklahoma could look like in the year 2032. That seems like some weird futuristic date, right? That like the Jetsons, and they've got flying cars, and Rosie the Robot, housekeeper, and all this stuff. But it's not, right? It's only 7 years away. I will be 51 by then. Okay. And, which is old, but not that old, right? And my kids will be out of school. My two older kids will be in college. And that's a whole different world. That's a little hard to imagine. Equally hard to imagine is a world in which Oklahoma has open primaries, has a $15 minimum wage, perhaps has an independent redistricting commission where citizens get to draw the lines instead of politicians. Perhaps we have reformed the initiative petition process so that politicians can't continue to erode it and try to get in there and undo the will of the people. Maybe we've got a veto-proof minority in the state legislature that, or majority, whatever it is, veto-proof. No, veto-sustaining. That's what I mean. Right now it's veto-proof, right? They've got a supermajority. But maybe in 7 years, there's a coalition of Republicans, Democrats, and perhaps some independents in the state legislature that are willing to work together to either uphold a veto or to override one when necessary. I made the mistake of recording this episode on my phone, and I forgot to turn on Do Not Disturb. So my phone just rang, and that cut out the conversation. Right when I was getting going, too, that was a real drag. Anyway, 2032. There's a future in which Oklahoma looks vastly different politically than it does now. And I think we can work towards it. I am today, in 2025, very grateful for the possibility of that future and for the opportunity, truly, to work towards it. I understand that a lot of people don't have the time or the resources or don't feel like they do to do this kind of work, and that's okay. We can't all be on all the time. We do have to pick our battles, to be diligent, be thoughtful, be strategic, and be willing to give a little bit more of ourselves for the greater good. So, some of the ways that we are working on this in next year, in 2026, which is a vitally important election, and I'm going to tell you why in ways you don't expect in just a minute, but at Let's Fix This, we're working on a few things behind the scenes. So this is a little glimpse behind the curtain for those of you who listen to Let's Pod This. First of all, data analysis. We're still kind of unpacking some of the data that's come out of 2024 and looking back. You know, we now have two election cycles under the new district lines that were redrawn in 2021, and that gives us, you know, it's one data point is a point, two makes a line, three makes a trend, and so next year is really important for that. But we're doing a lot of analysis about what the landscape in Oklahoma looks like. That is a distinctly nonpartisan analysis. We really just want to know, hey, where are people at? Where are the voters? Where are the non-voters? How do those populations correlate with educational attainment, with poverty levels, with healthcare outcomes? Are there inferences we can determine, right, that guide our work to be smarter, to be more strategic? And how can we share that data with our friends and our allies and our colleagues and with the media to build a more informed and engaged electorate? This kind of data can help influence public policy, right? It might influence the election board on how they conduct voter education and outreach. Could inform lawmakers on what kind of bills they file related to these issues. I think it's important. We all know that nerds make the world go round, and those of you who hate spreadsheets should be grateful that there's those of us out here who love them in a weird, weird way. We're also going to be doing a lot of volunteer mobilization, so I'm starting to already look at the calendar and create opportunities for you to be involved. So here's the deal. I'll make a deal with you. I will do the legwork to create opportunities for voter registration, for voter education, for voter turnout, for contacting voters. But I need you to show up. I can create all the opportunities in the world, but if no one shows up, it doesn't really do any good, does it? And this is clearly a job bigger than, you know, one guy in a basement. This is a job for all of us. I have a colleague in Michigan who is collecting signatures on a ballot initiative. I think it's for ranked choice voting. They have 5,000 volunteers across the state. I cannot even fathom that. And I said, "What's your secret, Kyle?" And he was like, "Michiganders care about the future of their state." I was like, "Bull honky, Oklahomans care too." He was like, "Well, how many volunteers do you have?" I was like, "Not 5,000. He's like, "Well, you could. You gotta ask." So I'm asking. Right now, in November of 2024, friends, will you commit to volunteering at least 3 times in 2026? That's it. 3 times. If everyone who listens or watches this show volunteers at least 3 times next year, we will definitely pass that 5,000 person mark. Don't let Michigan beat us. We don't like it in football. We don't want it in voting either. And you know why they're a competitive state? Why they're a swing state? Because people show up. They show up to vote, and they show up to volunteer. So, you, I believe in you. You are at least as good as, and arguably better than the good folks in Michigan. So all of our work, that kind of voter outreach, is really comes down to 3 things, which I mentioned already. I'm going to say them again. Voter registration, voter education, and voter turnout, right? Mobilization, you can call it that. We've got to register more people to vote. We have a huge number that have not yet been reached. And if we can come up with 250,000 more voters over the next decade, that's only 25,000 a year. That's not nothing. That's not easy, but it's definitely doable. They are out there. Then Oklahoma is a much more engaged state, on par with most other states, like middle of the pack, even. We're not aiming for first. That would be cool. Maine and Minnesota are 1 and 2 year after year after year. And that means they're showing up to vote when it's cold. I used to live in Minnesota. It is really cold in November. Why are they showing up at rates like 30% higher than us? That doesn't make any sense to me. We can do better. Voter education, clearly, right? I have so many people that say, "I don't know what these positions do. I don't know who's on the ballot. I don't know where to find information." Well, friends, we're working really hard. I've already started. We're making lists of candidates. We're working on definitions and descriptions of all the positions that'll be on the ballot. And we've got a new tool to load all this stuff in there that you can share with your friends. I talked to our colleagues at the League of Women Voters. They're already talking about their voter guide as well. We need to educate one another about what government and politics looks like in this state. I've done 315-ish episodes of this podcast. over the last 8 years, 9 years, we're trying to do our part. But again, friends, an ask for you. When these resources start being published, and they start coming out, as we get into the middle of next year, and people are really paying attention to these races, I need you to share them. Print them out. Share them with your friends. Send an email to your friends. Just take one of our newsletters. Forward it to 5 people who you don't think get the email. Say, hey, I get these emails from this organization. They're pretty cool. I find it pretty helpful. Thought you might too. That's it. Really, you don't even have to talk to them about it. Although it'd be cool if you did. There's an idea. How about a ballot bingo party where we all come over to your backyard, cook some burgers, discuss who's on the ballot or what's on the ballot, more importantly, the positions, like the roles, you know, what does the labor commissioner do? What does the insurance commissioner do? What's the corporation commissioner do? These are things that the public doesn't understand. I swear to God, if everyone knew what the corporation commissioners do, they would show up to vote in droves. You want to know why your electricity and your gas bill keeps going up every month? Ask the corporation commission. It's nuts. They have an immense amount of power, and no one knows what they do. They make good money, too. In fact, just this week, the board of the there's a legislative compensation board, and whatever the other one is, it's the same people, but they vote on statewide elected races. They just raised everyone's salaries, like 30%. You know when the last time I got a 30% raise? Never. Never in my life. That's crazy. Do we want to attract the best and the brightest? Absolutely. The legislature also got a raise. Everybody got a raise. Leadership got a bigger... I'm not necessarily begrudging those folks. But I am saying that we as voters should pay a lot more attention to who is running for these offices, what they stand to gain, and what they're doing with their time in those offices. Okay. And then thirdly, voter turnout. As I've said before, we're last. Dead last. We can fix this. But the reasons people don't vote, they're not registered. They don't know when the election is. They don't know who's on the ballot. They don't think their vote matters. Well, the first three we can definitely work on. You and I both, right? We can work on educating, registering more and more people. Get them registered, then tell them what's on the ballot, tell them how to vote, where to vote, when to vote, all that stuff. That's just information. It's not even an opinion. It's just facts. You go here on this day between these hours. It's pretty straightforward. Here's who's on the ballot. Here are the names. Google them. Here's the positions. Here's a explainer of what these positions do. Real easy. Super helpful. We can make this happen. You can put it on your Facebook. If you still tweet, you can put it over there. You can share it on Instagram. You can print it out and get one of those little flyer handout boxes like realtors use and put it in your front yard. Voter information handouts. And that way everyone who's out there walking their dog can stop by and grab one. How cool would that be? Right? You could text a link to 5 friends. Hey, y'all probably vote, but in case you don't, here's some information. Hey, I hope everyone's voting next week. Here's some information. That's all you gotta do. Ooh, you're nervous about your friend thinking you're political because you vote? That is ridiculous. Right? Also, there's a big difference between being political and being partisan. Most folks say, I don't want to be political. They actually mean, I don't want to be partisan. Everything's political. Potholes are political. That pothole gets fixed or doesn't because of politics. Right? Potholes are not partisan. They shouldn't be. All right. The reason why 2026 is so important, and I'll wrap up, is because it's way bigger than just the people who are on the ballot. 2026 is a political reset for Oklahoma. Every statewide office, I think there's 8 of them, is on the ballot. There no incumbents are going forward. So 8 wide open seats. All 101 seats in the state house are up for election. Many of those are running for re-election, but they're still all on the ballot. Or should be if someone else files against them. Filing them not till April, there's some time. half of the state Senate, so 24 out of the 48 seats in the Senate are up. Maybe a few others, if it's like a special election or someone's terming out. Then you've got 5 seats in Congress. They're all up for election. And one of our 2 U.S. Senate seats are up, right? So you've got U.S. Senate, you've got Congress, you've got governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, labor commissioner, insurance commissioner, state auditor, corporation commissioner. I'm forgetting one. Oh, you're probably listening and shouting it at your car stereo right now. It'll come back to me in a minute. So all that's on there. Legislative races. This is a big deal. And it's way bigger than we think. That's almost 150 seats right there, right? But it's not just 150 seats, right? It is 150 seats and all of the trickle-down politics from that. All of the positions that they can appoint, all the positions they hire for, new staff. It is all the positions that they have influence over. It is the vendors they can help choose. I'm not saying that they do, but we all see it happen, right? And it is the policies and the platforms that they can bring forth. And so when you're thinking about electing who the governor is going to be, you're probably choosing between, you know, 2 or 3 candidates. But it's more than just those names on the ballot. It is the infrastructure, the administration that they represent, right? Oh, we're going to get a new attorney general. Okay, who's that going to be? Who's going to be their deputies? Who's going to be the other staff that trickle down? What's the position that attorney general's office is going to take on issues like immigration, on drug enforcement, on Open Records Act and Open Meeting Act violations? There's a bunch of district attorneys who end up on the ballot. There are judges on there. There's a lot of stuff. And that this does take some effort on your part. I know that I'm hitting the same drum again of like, you have to do something. But seriously, you have to do something. We cannot just sit around and wave our hands in the air and be frustrated at the world and not do anything about it. I'm not saying you've got to quit your job and devote your entire life to advocacy and getting out the vote. If that's something you're thinking about, though, hit me up. But we all have to do a little bit. We've been doing this democracy thing in America for 250 years. This is not new. We didn't get this far by just sitting on our hands. And by God, I'm not going to give up on us in our 250th year because I'm frustrated with the way some things are going. Heck no, I'm going to dig in. And if I may, to make this a little bit more personal, next year is Let's Fix This's 10th anniversary. 10 years. Since I watched too much West Wing and created a Facebook event to invite people to go to the Capitol. 10 fucking years. I really did leave my job. I had a whole ass career doing something different. Nothing to do with politics, or so I thought. I voted sometimes. Maybe usually. Not even that often. And something clicked in me in late 2015, early 2016, because of our state budget. And I saw I was impacting people who also were just trying to live their lives, trying to get medication, trying to stay alive. And a political decision by a politician who wanted to get reelected made it harder for people I knew to get medication they needed to stay alive. It was not their fault, should not have had any impact on this at all, but it did. And so I made a Facebook event, and many of you showed up. So, in the year of our Lord, 2026, when it is America's 250th birthday, and it's Let's Fix This's 10th birthday, we are going to get shit done. I am counting on you. From here in this basement, I am counting on you to dig in. So next week, you're going to dig into some mashed potatoes, some turkey, some dressings, ham, whatever it is you're eating. Good. Hug your family. Tell them why you're thankful for them. Spend some time thinking about what this country and what this state means to you, and commit to yourself that you're going to be more involved. You're going to volunteer at least 3 times next year. You're going to donate to groups like Let's Fix This. If you gave us $25 a month, which is probably what you're paying for Netflix, heck, $10 a month. If you just sign up, you go to letsfixthis.org/donate. All right, letsfixthis.org/donate. Set it up. $10 a month. Put in your credit card number. Set it in and forget it. I will mail you a thank you card. I'll spray it with perfume or something. I don't know. Whatever you want. Like, I would be so grateful. Because every person that does that gets the football a little bit further than the field. And if everyone who is listening to this episode committed to giving $10 or $25 a month next year, I promise you, on my vote-loving little heart, we will do everything in our power to contact every single voter we can. Your money and your time are precious to you, and they are to me as well. And we need you, your time and your treasure. So throw us a little bit of scratch and then show up. We'll make it easy. You can canvas your own neighborhood. You don't even have to drive across town. You can just knock doors where you live. We'll give you the tools. We'll give you the scripts. I will come and stand in the street and applaud you after every door if that's what it takes. But we are going to fix this state. It's not all going to happen next year. But I think when we get to Election Day 2026 and you guys see how far we've come, you will be so ecstatic about the future, about what this means for Oklahoma, that all that stuff I said about 2032 earlier will suddenly seem much more viable. Decisions are made by those who show up. We say it every week in every episode, and I'm going to keep saying it because I want you to keep showing up and keep making those decisions. God bless you, and God bless the good state of Oklahoma. Happy Thanksgiving. We will see you back. No episode next week. It's the holidays. I'm taking a break. We'll see you back in December. Let's hit the ground running.